alumni, welcome to InterVarsity World Changers, the podcast celebrating God's world-changing work in and through InterVarsity alumni like you. I'm your host, John Steele, and today we're going to honor an InterVarsity alumnus whose influence has reached countless people around the globe for decades, and that InterVarsity alumnus is Pastor Tim Keller. As you may know, Tim Keller passed in May of 2023 after a multi-year battle with cancer. So for today's episode, I got to sit down and chat with Janet Essig and Dietrich Gruen, two InterVarsity alumni who went to school with Tim Keller at Bucknell University in the early 70s. And they're going to share a few memories of their time with him, the ways he's impacted them, and the role that InterVarsity played in Tim Keller, the college student, becoming Tim Keller, the author and pastor that's impacted so many lives. Also, I want to mention that a portion of this conversation will be used in partnership with an episode produced in collaboration with the Love Thy Neighborhood podcast. The episode's called Where the Gospel Meets Tim Keller and will be a broader exploration of his formative years on campus and his impact on New York City. You'll be able to find the full-length version of that episode here on InterVarsity World Changers and at Love Thy Neighborhood. You can check out the show notes for links. Thanks for tuning in, and enjoy Tim Keller's story as told by his college friends and fellow InterVarsity alumni, Janet and Dietrich. Janet, Dietrich, excited to hear some stories about Tim Keller today. Let's just start off with how were you introduced to Tim Keller? What's sort of the earliest memory that you have of your time with him?
I think Dietrich should go first.
Sure. Only because he and I were classmates, Bucknell University, class of 1972, but we were also freshman hallmates on the same floor of Trax Hall. And he was down the floor and always a big guy, 6'4", even as a freshman. And he was nerdy, so I didn't hang with him to start with. He and I became closer friends when my pursuits in college took an academic turn and a spiritual turn. And I remembered Tim to come back to. But we did some horseplay. We stuffed a VW with 19 of us freshmen on that ball instead of stuffing a telephone booth back in the day. It was an open roof, open hood, open door, open windows. We stuffed 19 of us in there. So Tim and I obviously got to know each other later in college, and then even after that, when he became the published author and pastor that he is, and then I listened to his broadcasts and his sermons, and we all look up to Tim for many reasons, and I can get into those later.
Yeah, Janet, how about you? What's your earliest memory of meeting Tim?
Well, a little background, just simply that I was in this Bible study group run by a very wonderful InterVarsity staff worker. She lived in the same town, and she opened a Bible study to high school students. Her name was Barbara Boyd, and she was interested in mentoring high school students because there were no other vehicles. Young Life didn't exist in this area and other parachurch organizations like that. So anyway, when we were all about to graduate, she wrote letters to the InterVarsity staff worker at all of the colleges that we were going to go to. So this letter made its way into the hands of Tim Keller. I'm not sure if he was president or if it was Bruce Henderson of the InterVarsity group at that time. I'm entering as a freshman, and Tim at this point is a junior. And so one night early in the semester, this tall man shows up at my door and introduces himself. He's Tim Keller, and explains a little bit why he knows who I am, and says, "Would you like to be involved in a small group?" So that was my introduction to him. The interesting thing about that was he asked me if I'd like to follow him and make the rounds and introduce himself to other members of the group. I don't know how the group was selected, but the next person that we knocked on the door of was Jim Essig, who ultimately became my husband. So that was kind of a very sweet memory that I have of my introduction to him.
That's amazing. What a great a multifaceted yes that you that you gave to following him in that way. Oh, that's phenomenal. Dietrich, you used the word, I think you used the word nerdy here, but when you first met Tim, but tell me, what was he like during college? I mean, just big picture, what do you remember his personality? Paint us a picture, because so many of us know, you know, Tim Keller, the author, Tim Keller, the pastor, and somebody who was, you know, deep in his faith and leading others in these ways. What was he like back then? What can you tell us about him then?
Well, I remember walking and talking along the hill down to and from classes, to and from the union, to and from intervarsity meetings. We were no longer freshman hallmates, but I would overlap with him coming out of classes. And I said I would have questions for him. Tim was a good listener. Tim knew how to ask questions. And I could pose any number of questions to him. And he was like a walking encyclopedia. Before there was Wikipedia, there was Tim Keller. So The Reason for God, a book that he's famous for later on, I posed some of those very questions to him as a college kid in the late 60s and 1970. I became a Christian in 1971, but the seminal meeting with Tim actually took place in May of 1970. We were both sophomores, and that was the month of the protests on campus, protesting the Vietnam War. And Tim was at the same rally I was. And a guy named Danny McMullen was the main speaker, taking the mic for the student body of Christians that wanted to protest it. Tim was picking off people to talk to and picked me off and noticed that I was proclaiming peace, peace in the world. But did I have peace in my heart? And Tim was able to discern what was missing in my life, and was instrumental in leading me in a pursuit, which would take another 10 months, but he invited me to everything. So he used the same principle that Janet experienced. Come along with me as I meet other people. And I just was collecting all these friends. Oh, good. If I can't find out who Jesus is on my own, I got all these helpers. And that was who Tim was. He was just a wonderful connector.
Dietrich, are there any a moment from that 10-month journey that stands out to you as like, oh, here's sort of a memory that I have of him walking through this time period with me?
Well, I'm conflating a couple things. I don't know if it was in that 10-month window, besides the conversation on the mall in around May 4 of 1970. Then there was the invitation to the Bible and Life Weekend at Penn State in February of 71. And that's where I crossed the line and became a believer. I prayed the prayer on a Saturday night. I had decided, if I couldn't figure it out in 6 months' time on campus, I would go to this weekend retreat. And if I couldn't figure it out there, I would take a month-long summer camp at Bear Trap Ranch and figure things out there. That's a discipleship and leadership training event, and I'm not yet a believer, and I'm signing up for it because Tim did. And so we were both enamored with the same Barbara Boyd that Janet spoke of, and she was influential in both of our lives in a similar way. So It was who Tim introduced me to and invited me along with and to meet and introducing me to books. We later manned a student book table together, an intervarsity book table, as Christians giving away evangelistic literature to people on campus. We did that side by side, and I loved how we engaged people that came up to our table.
Sounds like Tim was a big inviter. We're going to bring others along with us. It's something I'm noticing in each one of your stories is that there is this sort of communal component to let's get more people involved in this process together. Come with me.
Yes, come and see.
Janet, how about you? Stories that you remember that sort of paint a picture of Tim during his college days, moments of engaging in questions of faith with him or developing in your own faith with him. What things stand out to you?
I remember endless conversations with him. He'd come and plop himself in the chair in my room, and we would do this deep dive into the implications of our faith. I hadn't realized until I read this spiritual biography that Colin Hanson had written that Tim was a new believer, that he actually became a Christian. He had a lot of background growing up in the church, but when I met him, he was a believer, but it was a new experience.
Huh.
So what Dietrich was talking about, the listening, he did that his whole life. People used to question him about, and he even talked about it, you know, why he didn't write books earlier. And part of it was he was a busy pastor, but he also said that, you know, he was taking in the questions of skeptics and trying to understand what it was that troubled them or what were the obstacles to belief, and then considering the implications of faith. You know, he would commonly say, to the degree that you understand, or, you know, it goes from your head to your heart, that transforms the way you live and also the reality. You know, is this real? He wrote me a little note when he was graduating, and one of the things that I just want to read you a section of it because it's really pretty interesting. He said, you know, over nearly 2 years, directly and indirectly, through flashes of wisdom and strokes of idiocy, we pushed each other toward what God wants us each to be. And in my thankfulness, I guess I'll never forget our experience or our relationship. And then he said, remember, clarify. And that truly was an important aspect of every conversation. It was really wrestling with, you know, who God was. And I mean, we were all confused college students, you know, who are we? You know, who is God? What is he calling us to be? And, you know, what is his call in our lives? So, yeah, there were a lot of conversations wrestling on those topics.
Janet, you mentioned we were all confused college students. you've both talked about like that Tim had not become like had not fully stepped into his faith until fairly recently at this point, even though he had a background of church and engaging in faith in some ways. Are there things that you can look back on and say, like, here's a place where Tim was just like any other college student? Here were some of the things that he was trying to figure out. Here's some of the questions he was asking. You talk about him being somebody that was answering and listening and working through questions with others. Were there places, whether in faith or just in everyday life, that you remember Tim working through questions as a young college student?
I mean, you know, it was the whole panoply of things like, you know, suffering and, you know, the big question, how do you deal with suffering? And identity questions. Okay, so I'm in this place at this time and I'm really wrestling with the reality of God, you know, and trying to understand how to develop greater intimacy with him. You know, InterVarsity introduced us to the idea of quiet time, you know, and studying and having guides. And then, you know, it was Bible study and then it was prayer and then it was fellowship and those fundamentals. And the InterVarsity experience, I remember Tim saying later on in life, you know, it was so important to him in the sense that InterVarsity majored on the majors, you know, on the core beliefs that drew Christians together. And later on, you know, Tim would talk about, especially when he got cancer diagnoses, about, you know, these things had to be real. There were more than, I mean, that's the struggle, you know, more than what we intellectually assent to and how we can even fool ourselves into thinking we have pushed it down into our hearts and very being and are really resting on those truths rather than just, you know, talking about them. So, it began then, but it continues always.
Yes. It sounds like, thinking about, as you mentioned, the end of Tim's life and, walking through cancer and asking these questions at an early age about suffering, that those were going to be very important questions for him to be able to have answers to. And as you say, to be pushed down, to take deep root in who he was, to be able to rely fully on the goodness and the hope of Jesus in the midst of suffering, that was an important thing for him to be working through, even at that young age. I'd love for us to like step back in the story of Tim's own faith development here, what are the parts of the story that you know as far as the influence of InterVarsity in Tim's faith development? Is it InterVarsity where he came to faith in the first place? Is that with Barbara Boyd? Is that where did that happen? What's the story that you know around that? And then his development as a leader of others through that process. What are the parts of that story that you know?
What I know is that Barbara Boyd was instrumental in teaching him how to really dig deep into scripture. Even years later, I remember being in his office in Manhattan one time, and he said, "Did I still have my Bible in Life notes on inductive Bible study that Barbara had taught?" And in fact, I did. And he still had his because it didn't teach, you know, she didn't teach him how to preach, but she told him how to get into the Word of God. And and he used that method, which, you know, some people think is pretty formulaic, but it was a good discipline. And there were people that have been introduced to his sermons and are always commenting, you know, how did he get all that out of that passage? And it was related to that. So Barbara's influence was really strong. She came to the campus one time to run a seminar. And then, of course, at the InterVarsity camp, she gave a talk on lordship, which was so memorable. And it's quoted in Colin Hanson's book. He used it many times in sermons because it was a moment where, okay, if this is truly who God is, you bring God along as a co-pilot when he's holding the universe with his word of power, and someone has a claim on your life, that you're not there just for yourself. You were created by somebody, and it's not your life, your role and your happiness that the whole thing is about. It's a switch that goes on to realize, oh my, God's the one who's sovereign and in control, and he has purposes and plans, and I am leaning into those rather than trying to figure out who I am, you know, or the meaning of life on my own.
Yeah, I found the talk that Barbara Boyd gave that both Tim and I heard at Bear Trap Ranch and that Colin Hanson included in his book. This is Barbara Boyd looking at us saying something like, if you want to invite me into your house and you say, come on in, Barbara, stay out, Boyd. Her name is Barbara Boyd. I wouldn't know what to do because I am Barbara Boyd. In fact, I couldn't even say this half is Barbara and this half is Boyd. So I'll just bring this half in because I'm all Barbara and I'm all Boyd. I'm both. So you either get me all or you get neither of me. Then she turned and said, if you say I would like the loving Jesus, I would like the helping Jesus, I would like the Jesus I can ask to help me through the hard times, but I don't want the holy Jesus. I don't want the powerful Jesus. I don't want the Jesus who is great, the Lord Jesus. You get no Jesus at all that way. Think about this for a minute. And we did. And then to use the illustration of the earth and the sun and how powerful the universe is. She used a couple of those illustrations. Tim and I both gravitated to them and have subsequently used them in our sermons and in our life. And we both had a understanding of Jesus as Lord and Savior, both and Barbara and Boyd, you know, kind of experience. And he had that in his sophomore year, and I had mine in my junior year.
Yeah. The other thing I would say from that camp experience was the verse, I will make you fishers of men. The challenge was, you know, go off and dig deep into that verse, meditate on it, and see what truths God will reveal to you. And of course, he remembered it as 30 minutes. I remembered it as hours. So, but what happened was that in reporting back the experience, there were profound insights that people received, but they didn't receive them after the first 5 minutes. It was usually after many minutes. And of course, the point was to go deep. And she used this analogy of there being a gold mine and a cave. And, you know, outside the cave was puddles where there were flecks of gold, you know, gold dust. And that we could be satisfied. And most Christians, she contended, were satisfied with getting the little elements of truth, the gold dust that was easily accessible. But if you really wanted to know the living God, you needed to dig deep. You had to go deep into the mind. And that exercise was a practical example of that. And I think that had a profound effect on all of us, because my husband used to say that Christians are generally lazy. They want an experience, but they're not really willing to work as hard following Christ as they are about, you know, something for their careers or something for their schoolwork. But the reward is so great, because a holy God deserves that kind of attention and that kind of following, and that sense of being awakened, you know, that we're half asleep, we're drowsy because we're so distracted by things that are going on in our world. But Barbara was very demanding in a good way. You know, she expected a lot. She wanted a lot for us. And I think that resonated with all of us who had those kinds of experiences that said, yes, the Lord rewards those who seek him. So.
And Tim took that to heart, as did I. And Tim became the embodiment of it. In terms of being a voracious reader, Tim was always carrying books and reading widely and quoting from them. C.S. Lewis, Jonathan Edwards, he could read the Church Fathers and the contemporary stuff. And wow, I thought you had to read a lot just to get through the classes of the day. Tim was reading so much outside of class.
Well, and he would say years later that people thought he was brilliant. And he said, no, God gifted him with a wonderful memory so that he could quote these things. But I always said to him, you shortchange yourself, because you figure out how those things all mesh together and make the connections. Yeah, yeah. But he was doing that even back at Bucknell. He was definitely doing that. He would bring in ideas and things that, you know, you were seemingly unrelated. But he also had such a following. Frank King was his roommate for all 4 years at Bucknell. He was not a believer. And of course, in those days, it was pre-cell phones, pre-email, all this instant communication. You know, we had black phones on our dorm room walls. And then, we put notes in people's mailboxes, but people were constantly dropping by Tim's room and knocking on the door. And of course, Tim was never there. It was always Frank that was opening the door to have to say, no, he's not here, or even answering the phone. It was never for poor Frank. He did become a believer in his senior year, but there was this something about the way Tim listened and the way he communicated that drew people to him. Hmm. You know, something about the way he heard people that he was able to zero in on the one thing in the multitude of words you used that was really important.
Which, you know, again, seems to speak to that. Call him a great reader, a great listener. So somebody who takes in information really well, somebody who is dedicated to clarifying, to making sure that they understand, which I assume then are things that make it so he can sort of drill down to the heart of the issue. I've gathered, which sort of takes me back to, you know, inductive Bible study method. He's spent a lot of time observing. He's done some interpreting, and then he can jump straight to, okay, this is the response that I need to give to this right here. And that he seems to be very gifted in those things.
When he came to New York, a friend of mine was going to his night services pretty frequently. And in those days, the church was growing, but it wasn't the 5,000 plus that and the multiple services that it ended up becoming. But after those early sermons, he'd have a Q&A, and you could get some pretty tough questions, but he never worried about inviting people to ask those hard questions. I think probably because he had thought about most of them, for a long time. And he would claim later on when he wrote his books that all of those discussions helped him because it gave him better understanding. And of course, the funny thing was, if nobody said anything and nobody asked a hard question, Kathy's wife would ask a hard question.
He couldn't get away from it that easily.
No.
One of the InterVarsity spaces that I know was also really important in his development was Urbana. Are there parts of that story that you two can tell us about how Urbana influenced him?
Only what I read in the book by Colin Hansen. Evidently, we were all influenced by the 1970 Urbana where Tom Skinner spoke, and it was on social justice issues and racism. He was later confronted by an InterVarsity staff with our Black Campus Ministry. I say our because I was on InterVarsity staff through the 70s and early 80s. And Tim, by the way, was also on staff for a couple of years in the Boston area at Framingham State while going to seminary. We both went to the 73 Urbana, but at the 70 Urbana, we listened to tapes. And that's what influenced Tim. He, even if he couldn't go to an event, he had to hear about it and ask people who went there. He'd interview those who attended. And that was influential. 70 was a tumultuous year, 1970, in campus lives. So Tim was current on that, and InterVarsity was wrestling with cultural issues, and we did so at Urbana, significantly influencing him on his idea of mission and urban mission, and he would develop that later.
And there was a little bit of that through InterVarsity in the action group model, and I'll get confused whether it was the freshman or the sophomore year, but I remember we visited the state prison. We went to the state hospitals.
I remember those going into the prisons at Lewisburg Federal Penitentiary. Jimmy Hoffa was there at the time. And we did Bible study and chapel services. Tim and I took a turn, and that was significant. And the hospital visits, as Janet mentions. So service projects. But it was really action groups that did outreach. Two people became Christians in my one action group. And 80 became Christians over a course of the last 2 years. In my life at Bucknell, a 20-member chapter with Tim as the chapter president becomes 100.
Wow.
By the time Janet is in that leadership group, and then 150 with her leadership. Wow. 2 years running. So, yes, we were doing a lot of service and outreach. Tim was the epitome of it.
What an amazing picture of growth over the course of a couple of, you know, college lifespans there. That's amazing to see that at work. Janet, you've mentioned a few things that have sort of spanned from college to knowing him later in life. Is there a snapshot of Tim that stands out in your memory from later in life of, here's just a story that illustrates who he was even towards the end of his life or at other big or challenging moments in his ministry, anything like that that stands out to you?
My story with Tim is very personal, so I can share this. He was the one who, in college, I said, introduced me to my husband, Jim. And Jim was very serious about his faith and liked very much to have all the discussions. He and Tim would talk endlessly. But as awkward as we all were, and I guess maybe we were in that nerdy category, Dietrich, one of the things that he did was, I think it was the end of my sophomore year, he spoke to both of us and he says, I think there's more going on between the two of you than you know. And so actually that was a way that we moved from being best friends to being engaged. I mean, really, there was no dating.
Wow.
But it was, so that's a very fond memory of his pastoral role even then. But then my husband didn't have a long life. Well, he died at 33. And I don't know to this day how Tim found out about it. We were in Maryland. And at that point, there wasn't a lot of exchange. You know, he would always thank me for staying in touch because their philosophy was where they were. That's where God planted them. So we would have like one, you know, visit in all these different places. And so anyway, he somehow found out about, and this was before Jim died. He called and had a lengthy conversation with us. And honestly, I can't remember the words that he used, but what he conveyed was the love of Christ in a way that was so real to me. And if you look at his sermon structure, that's exactly what he did in every sermon. He always brought it back to Christ. after Jim died, I had such a hard time believing that God loved me. I couldn't reconcile what had happened with, you know, the nature of God's love. And so one of the things that so impressed me was his sermons. And of course, they were on discs in those days. So I'd be commuting an hour back and forth to work and listening and sobbing. Kathy used to say his sermons would start out like a normal, you know, she would say at some point there was a change and you went to worship. And it happened almost every time you listened to him, to Tim preach. And that was my experience. And it just, yeah, nobody could illustrate. And there were all different ways that he used to illustrate God's love. So many ways that he would communicate it, different images and visions and ways of talking about it, because it's endless. So fast forward, Jim dies. I traveled. They invite me to come to Philadelphia. Kathy takes care of my two children, and we do this afternoon walk, long walk, talking about heaven. And he said to me, he said, "You're ahead of me." I said, "What do you mean I'm ahead of you?" He said, "You're ahead of me because you have had to lean into these truths to know that they're real because of what's happened." But he would talk about, you know, C.S. Lewis's view of heaven. And of course, you're so desperate to know where the one you've lost is and what they're experiencing. And he talked about, you know, this view of things being more real. So last year when he died and I went to the memorial service in New York, I don't remember if it was Michael, his son, who's a pastor, or whether it was Kathy. I think it might have been Michael said something about his father being more alive now than he's ever been. And I tied that back to that conversation because of that, you know, everything being more solid, you know, that these are just shadows. This world, you know, doesn't have the substance that one day it will with the new heaven and the new earth. So there was this thread all along in my life with Tim coming in and out.
Janet, thank you so much for sharing that story. That draws me back to some of what you were saying around suffering and being able to speak into and ask questions about suffering and sadness, and that through all of those things that Tim would draw you back to Christ. And that I know that that was his own testimony in the midst of his own suffering, that it was always drawn back to Christ. Christ is his foundation, as his hope. And that is such an encouraging thing to see, that was in both sides of that story, whether it was for others or for himself, that in the midst of suffering, the message that was communicated was Christ as foundation and as hope and as joy. And even being led into places of worship in the midst of wrestling with suffering. That is such an amazing picture and a testament to that. And may we all have that perspective when we are in the midst of our own suffering in this world and in this life. Dietrich and Janet, in our InterVarsity World Changers podcast, I always ask, what's an encouragement that the person that I'm talking to would give to other InterVarsity alumni as they partner with Jesus in his world-changing work? But I'm wondering, is there an encouragement that Tim ever gave to you that you think he would have passed along to other InterVarsity alumni as this is what it looks like to keep going? This is what it looks like to continue saying yes to Jesus throughout the long haul of your life and partnering with him in the work that he's doing in the world. Is there anything that stands out to you?
I have an email that was sent to me shortly after Tim was diagnosed. I think it's very poignant to the things we've been talking about and an encouragement. This is from one of John Newton's pastoral letters. He said, quote, "Fight against every thought that would represent it as desirable to be permitted to choose for yourself. When you cannot see your way, be satisfied that he is your leader. When your spirit is overwhelmed within you, he knows your path. He will not leave you to sink." I love that. We're always interpreting our lives and things that have happened to us in our lives, but the knowledge that God is sovereign and that his ways are definitely not our ways. You know, even the call to Redeemer, they were recounting, and he would be asked many times, how did you know that God was calling you to New York? And he'd say, I didn't. He said the two other guys wouldn't take it. So I thought I would give it a try.
Oh, wow. That's great. Dietrich, any final words of encouragement that you would offer up to your fellow alumni as a result of knowing Tim when you did?
I don't know how much to ascribe to knowing Tim, but I think keep growing, keep learning, keep connecting. For alumni of InterVarsity, we are in it for life. And I just have been going back to more InterVarsity reunions. I keep in touch with my colleagues on staff. I left InterVarsity staff back in 85, and I'm still supporting my colleagues from that era. And I'm still in touch with 50 of my classmates from that 100 who had become Christians at Bucknell. And I think that's what alumni we can and should do, is stay connected. None of us are going to be as popular as Tim Keller, but we can each in our own way contribute to somebody else. And in coming back to my 50th reunion at Bucknell, Tim had just passed. We did our memorial for him. And the influence that he had on all of us was the subject of what we shared. And then we got to say how we were fishers of men, and we got to do a similar Tim Keller influence on somebody else. And those people spoke up. But again, it started with Tim. Janet, you got mentioned in that respect too, because you were an influence on me. I didn't know you were only a freshman when I was a junior. You seemed well beyond your years, an old soul. You were an old soul to start with. So you have influence. We all do. And that's what InterVarsity teaches us. It's not just a one and done with your college years. Keep following Christ, find other places to serve, and read one of any number of 35 books that Tim has read, and you'll see the value of alumni involvement and carrying on in the faith.
Absolutely. Janet, Dietrich, thank you so much for your time today. Thanks for sitting down and talking through some of these memories, these experiences, of helping paint a picture as we want to remember Tim Keller well. And I think I really do believe through remembering him that we are pointed back to Jesus, the goodness of Jesus in our lives. And what there's just one story or one example of somebody who is saying yes to Jesus, and in the ways that he's inviting, he invited Tim to change the world alongside of him. And that, may, as you said, none of us will be as popular as Tim Keller, more than likely. But that the Lord is doing the same thing for each one of us. As you were reminded, Dietrich, at these reunions, that we have been called to step into these places, that we have an influence because we were influenced, and those people will influence, and that we get to be a part of that by saying yes to the Lord's leadership in our life. And I appreciate the encouragement that you've provided for those who listen in, alumni or not, to keep saying yes to Jesus, to keep partnering with him in his world-changing work, and to wait and see what those ripple effects are down the road. So thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you, John, for hosting us.
Yeah, God bless you.
Thanks for tuning in, alumni, and thanks again to our guests, Janet and Dietrich. You can check the show notes for links to the episode, Where the Gospel Meets Tim Keller. Thank you, Love Thy Neighborhood, for inviting us to be a part of this story with you. If you know someone who needs to hear this story, take just a moment to share the episode with them, and then be sure to leave us a rating and a review as well. Now go change that world, alumni. Thanks for listening to InterVarsity World Changers. This podcast is brought to you by the InterVarsity Alumni Relations Team, hosted and produced by John Steele, production assistance by Mike Santara, and our theme song is Crazy by InterVarsity alumnus Andy Minio.